T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This is St. Louis's News Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
And this is Overtime.
Let's do it.
Well, I hit the lottery. How did I get so lucky? To be joined today, Tom Ackerman with you on Overtime. Amy Mark Scores, how are you doing today?
Well, hello, Tom. I am doing great. I so enjoyed Total Information AM this morning because Sir John Hancock always brings an element of delight and surprise.
It was fun, wasn't it? It was great. Well, it was so good, we're going to do it tomorrow and the next day. We're going to do it all week. John Hancock will be in with us. Look who's joining us today, Jane Duker. How are you?
Hi, Tom Ackerman. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. With Amy and Jane, I'm Tom, and let's get right to it on Overtime. Coming soon to an Instagram or Twitter feed near you, social media influencers promoting coronavirus prevention measures on behalf of Missouri Governor Mike Parson. Here are just some of those who have been approached on this project. Andy Cohen, the St. Louis native, host on Bravo. Mm-hmm. TikTok star Nicholas Ray. Oh, boy. He has 1.7 million followers. I'm sure my daughter Erica knows all about him. Also, Jenna Fisher has been asked. Ozzie Smith, Mike Matheny. Amy, Mark Scores, what's going on here? This just came in. I saw this flood my social media yesterday. What's going on?
Well, I guess these campaigns do have some influence, hence the influencers. I've been wearing a mask. I'm not sure if I'm extra motivated by the celebrities who are telling me to wear a mask. But you know what might have the most influence? It might be the TikTok star with young people. Because all I know is that the youths these days not only are watching TikTok, but they're always buying merch. They're getting merch off of TikTok and YouTube stars. And I wonder if they start having TikTok and YouTube star merch, kids are going to be buying it.
I agree. I think that the young people, that's where they get all of their information. So I think for old people like me, you know, I still, and I'm talking about the utes. So that's what we used to call them, the utes from the movie. But no, I think it's fine. I'm not real thrilled about $1 million that they're spending on it. You know, it's important. We got to get people, especially like you said, the young people wearing masks. It's impossible. I have a kid in college, a kid who's a senior in high school, and you have to fight to get him to wear the masks, and it's not cool. And so you got to sort of make it cool to get them to respond. So, you know, I'm willing to try.
Well, in all seriousness, I mean, the coronavirus patient numbers requiring hospitalization are up big time and rising at alarming levels in Missouri. A handful of other states have not been able to post accurate data on COVID-19 online dashboards because of a flaw in the federal reporting system. Since Tuesday, the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services coronavirus dashboard posted a message that the total number of patients hospitalized has been underreported since October 17th. That note blaming challenges entering data to the portal, Jane, used by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for collecting those daily hospitalizations. Are you concerned about that piece of news?
Yes. And for me, it's never been about the number of cases. It's always been about overwhelming the healthcare system, because that's what we have to avoid. And so I am concerned when they say hospitalizations are going up. We don't want to run out of space. And what's interesting about St. Louis, we have such great healthcare here. We have so many great hospitals that people from other areas of the region come to our hospitals. So even if we're not experiencing the uptick in the city and county, the collar counties and even a little further away, they are flooding our hospitals with the spikes out there. So, you know, it does matter, even if it's not just St. Louis City and County. So I think overwhelming the healthcare system is our biggest risk. And it, when flu comes and we get to winter time, we could have a second wave of both. And so, yeah, that's the number that concerns me, is hospitalizations and ventilator use.
Right. The whole point of the shutdown initially was to give the healthcare system a fighting chance, to not overwhelm the hospitals. It is concerning when you look at the numbers have been underreported since October 17th. I mean, almost 10 days ago. That's concerning, especially when you look at different cities and counties across the country. I just read a story yesterday. El Paso County, Texas, now has a mandatory curfew from, I think, about 10 o'clock at night till 5 a.m. unless you're going to work, because they have their hospitals and ICUs at full capacity. They're now airlifting people out of that area to other counties where there's rooms in the hospitals. I think that would be a terrifying situation to be in.
It's overtime, and recently I heard that New York City was a ghost town. Well, not when it came to voting, I'll tell you that. I saw it with my own eyes. We'll have it for you in just a moment on Overtime, one of our many topics with Amy Markscores and Jane Duker. I'm Tom Ackerman. It's 8:38. It's 8:42. It's Overtime with Amy Markscores and Jane Duker. I'm Tom Ackerman. Amy, on the first day of early voting in New York on Saturday, tens of thousands of people waited in long lines, often for hours on end, to cast their ballots. Social media was abuzz with videos and photos of snaking voting lines outside polling places across the state, not just in New York City. Are we worried about long lines to vote, Amy?
Okay, so currently I'm not, for a few reasons. One, New York always has really long lines for everything. I know people who voted in 2012 who had to wait 3 or 4 hours to vote. Two, I would imagine that the pictures look a lot longer because everyone is, or the lines make, you know, look a lot longer because everyone is socially distanced by 6 feet. So maybe the line would be just as long in another year, but it looks longer because of the social distancing. And then three, I do think so many people are voting early. This was the first day of voting in New York. So my guess is everybody had the same idea. And I would be shocked if this continues, you know, throughout the next few days. And maybe on election day itself, the lines kind of sift back down to normal.
Well, and to me, the most important thing is that people are not complaining that the process is going badly. You know, right away, if people are upset, if it's difficult to vote, or if they're having problems, and they're not. So I agree with you. You wait in line for everything in New York. So people are used to it. And I think hopefully the more people vote early, the less jammed up election night will be. For those of us who kind of do this stuff, it would be nice to know if we had a winner or if everything is going well on election night. And the more votes we get in and the smoother the process is, I think the more people can have a little bit more trust in the election.
The vice president is out and about campaigning. At least five of Mike Pence's aides, including his chief of staff, have tested positive for the coronavirus. Pence has been in close contact with many of them, but he is continuing on, Jane, with his campaign schedule after testing negative on Sunday. In fact, the New York Times even reported that White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows tried to keep the diagnoses from going public, pressing the White House Medical Office to shelf a planned press statement. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm not a fan of people hiding the fact that they have the virus. I mean, people you are spending time with are entitled to know whether they're at risk. I'm not a big fan of just flouting it. I mean, we're trying to tell people wear masks, be responsible. And when you have, you know, the leaders of our country not being responsible, it's very frustrating. I don't see any need for it. Frankly, the election's probably baked. And so putting people at risk for the virus just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I feel like I'm always trying to sift through information and the current situation, because I do understand, for instance, when you do have a COVID outbreak in the White House, whether it was with Trump or with Pence's aides, you do have to be careful how you disseminate and present that information. Make sure you know what you're talking about, right? You know, not the everybody panic, we've got it. You want to make sure you disseminate that information in a responsible way. However, you still want to have an element of transparency. You can't cover things up. So I understand it's something of a delicate dance. Whether or not they handled it correctly, I don't know. And I've been thinking about, you know, the Trump getting coronavirus, Pence getting coronavirus. In some ways, you know, they are practicing very safe COVID measures in the sense that people are being tested constantly around them. Sometimes they're wearing masks. And in other ways, it is more dangerous because they're traveling and they're seeing so many more people, for instance, than I am. So it's just a messy situation when you don't know what's going on. And honestly, I don't know quite how to parse through every action and know if it's right or not.
Are schools becoming a source of super spreading? The answer to that apparently is no, according to data emerging from random testing in the United States and Britain. Elementary schools especially seem to seed remarkably few infections. Amy, the quote from Brooke Nichols, an infectious disease modeler at Boston University School of Public Health, says, "The more and more data I see, the more comfortable I am that children are not, in fact, driving transmission, especially in school settings." Mm-hmm. How about that? So many schools are still remote and virtual, Amy.
I know. It blows my mind because it doesn't seem to be following the science. And this isn't just studies out of the United States, but studies across the globe. Charlie and I talked about that recent NPR report that showed two international studies showed that opening schools did not correlate with an increase in COVID cases. In fact, in Spain, when they opened schools, COVID cases continued to drop for 3 weeks. Domestic studies have shown the same. We spoke with Dr. Kristen Stahl, a local pediatrician, who wrote an initial letter, our column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, calling to open up the schools. It was signed by over 50 pediatricians. They now have over 150 pediatricians saying, we need to look at the consequences of keeping schools closed, from depression, anxiety, a rise in suicidal ideation among young people, obesity, child abuse, and as well as the growing education gap. I'm not sure why schools aren't following the science in this.
I agree. I think that people were terrified that everything was going to go bad when the schools open. We had the huge debate in St. Louis County about sports and whether that was actually transmitting cases. And I will tell you, The proponents for letting the kids play had really good data, and I never agreed with the county's data that this is now. I think the older young people, I call them, past high school and on, I think that's where most of the spreading is going with young people. But I think the kids all the way up through high school, I think the data is pretty clear that them doing school and sports is not what's spreading this. And I having two kids, older kids, seeing my daughter do virtual, then go back, and then, you know, they were kind of going back and forth, and now they are full time in person. The change in her is exponential. I think I underestimated the challenges involved in virtual learning on a long term basis. And so I'm back. I'm glad my son is in college, in grad school, and it's all virtual, and it's a little frustrating and lonesome. And but I'm glad my daughter's back, and I've seen a marked change in her.
Well, our girls have gotten really good at those Zoom meetings. I mean, they have become Zoom experts. Here's a big question when we come back. What is the craziest thing you've done during a Zoom meeting? People are multitasking and Zooming. This should be interesting. We'll have it next. It's 8:49 on Overtime.
I want to hear more.
This is Overtime on KMOX.
A few minutes left of Overtime with Amy Mark Scores and Jane Duker. I'm Tom Ackerman. Great to be along with you here at 8:53. Is it okay to do something else while you're on a Zoom meeting? Well, a lot of people have made the determination that yes, it is. I think a lot of people are admitting that they are multitasking during Zoom, so you can take yourself on and off camera, et cetera. What about you, Amy? I'm going to ask you first. You are on a lot of Zooms, I would assume. What were some of the things that you have done during a Zoom meeting?
Okay, I'm such a square. I'm not very good at breaking the rules, so I'm so afraid of like being on camera when I don't know I'm being on, when I'm on camera. So I will like cover the camera on my computer just because it freaks me out. I haven't done anything really exciting. I've cooked. That's the only thing I've done. My friends have gardened. They've walked their dogs. I have two friends who have no problem stripping down to their underwear and working out while on a Zoom meeting. And I could never do that because with my luck, I would be on camera. I know I would. Yeah.
Yep. No, I'm too afraid of being seen, heard. The most aggressive thing I've done is laundry. Yeah. It's boring, but yeah, I get nervous about it. I really do. And I'm convinced the cameras are always watching anyway.
Yes.
So.
Well, I agree.
That could be. I think that, you know, when you're on a Zoom, at least in my case, I'm concerned that they're going to call on me for something. You know, if I'm on a Zoom, I'm on it for a reason. I'm not just sort of hanging out unless it's a press conference or something like that where I don't need to be seen on camera, I guess. But I guess for me, I had both dogs in the car and we were waiting for a vet appointment. So they're like, you know, all over the place and like excited that we were getting close in the Zoom and I'm trying to pay attention to what they're saying. And you know, I was on and off camera because I wanted to show that I was there and then off. But otherwise, no, I've tried to arrange Zoom meetings. I've had two Zooms kind of land at the same time. And so I had to give time to one and time to another. That did happen.
Ouch. That's like dating two people at once, mm-hmm. where you have to have separate phones and make sure you, you know, recognize the ringtone.
Tell you what, it's virtual dating. That's something maybe we'll save for our next show is talk about that. But virtual dating is definitely a thing out there.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God I don't have to do it.
Yeah, same. Amy, what's coming up on the show?
Well, Jane Duker will be joining me, as well as Cynthia Spraggs. We were just talking about Zoom, and she's going to give us some advice on how to actually get work done virtually, because I think a lot of people are struggling with it. Also, Maria Everdeen, she is the etiquette queen. She will show us how to make a good first impression, not only in person with socially being distanced, but also via Zoom. And lastly, Chris Peterson. He was the Democratic candidate in that famous Utah gubernatorial commercial where the two candidates are shaking hands, or I guess socially distanced, and sharing a good time. So we'll talk to him as well.
Look forward to it. 9 to 11 on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.